All right, let's begin again. Christiane has a few more things to share with us, and then there'll be questions. All right, yeah. Would you write your questions?
Oh, sharing. I want to hear about your time.
Chris, I have a couple of questions. One of them is, you know me, and I relate these levels of consciousness to the states that Ken Wilber was talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is our first, the gross level, right? And then the subtle, and you remember how he was defining those states? Are those relatable in any way to what he was saying?
Yes.
And secondly, I would like you to, if you could, give us as much information as you can about how your 7 years of meditation really impacted your life, as it seems to have been. I know you told us the story about your journey, but how long did it take for all that stuff to come to you? I mean, it hasn't hit me yet.
Okay.
Still waiting.
First, maybe even what motivates us to meditate. You can't talk anyone into meditating. Mm-hmm. You have to want to do it. In my personal experience, we were going through a very rough time, and things just weren't working anymore. And I went to St. Rachel Church, and I went in the cry room. I had a lot of cry room experience as my kid. And I thought it was my time to go in there and have a good cry. So, and I was completely, I feared I need help here. And I just kind of threw that God, you know what you're doing, you better show me, because I don't know anymore what to do. And that was really a moment of surrender for me. And I walked out of the church and kind of just feared, now it's in his hands. And as I walked out of the church, the entrance of the church has all these flyers lying there. And on the right-hand side, there were a stack of flyers. I didn't notice any others. I only noticed those. And it was Sister Suzanne Dunn had planned a whole day, a workshop at St. Joseph in Calgaria on centering prayer. Mm-hmm. I grabbed the flyer, I came home, and I told my husband, honey, Angel, we got a date. And he goes, what? He had this idea, a movie, you know. I go, no, we plan a whole day. A whole day? I go, yeah, we're going to Calgaria and to a centering prayer workshop. And he's a good boy, and he went along. He was a little suspicious, and he sat there. And then when the woman started, within 2 minutes, he looked toward me, and he goes, this is going to be good. And I don't remember the presentation, but what really impacted us at the end, they showed a DVD of Thomas Keating's work with prisoners. And this particular DVD was actually lifers, people who got a life sentence. And they had these guys sitting there, tattoos everywhere, missing teeth, were in really rough elements. But when they interviewed this one guy, I mean, it was like hearing Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. And he said, this has changed my whole life. And he said, I was never free on the outside as I am now on the inside. Mm-hmm. And he went inside the prison. And Stanton goes, hey, if it worked for him, it's going to work for us. We figured no one can have the kind of luggage this poor guy must have, you know, whatever took the guy in there. So that was our motivation factor, this lifer story. And we have been doing it pretty much daily ever since. Yeah, we don't like missing out on it. My husband is even much more gung-ho. He does it twice a day consistently. Yeah, so, and the wonder about it is, you know those stages of Ken Wilber's? The funny thing is, it kind of evolves on its own. Meditation just does it kind of for you. You don't know, it just happens. And all of a sudden you get these thoughts suddenly. Like, I remember when I got this thought, that whole original sin is real. It just hit me. It didn't sit with me anymore. And nothing in the world, no theologian could have convinced me otherwise. It was a certitude. I just knew it for sure. And then next thing you know, you want to know more about that. Where did that come from? It's kind of there's a synergy involved. Once the ball gets rolling, it just goes major time. It goes in all directions, and all these grass can show us. They are an attempt to put on paper something that unfolds naturally. And it unfolds as we are ready. Not one person has the same history as another. Not everybody is going to have nausea. Many people don't have anything. There's a woman in my class on Tuesday, our Mama Spencer, explaining that suffering is part of life. And she looked so worried suddenly. She said, "Mama Spencer, I got a problem." And he goes, "What?" "I haven't really suffered." She said, "I have had the greatest life. I had a loving husband. I have great children. They did great in life." So she goes, "How am I going to get there?" And he goes, No. You can get there regardless. It's a personal journey. There is no particular recipe for anyone. It's a journey into the unknown. The key is to have the faith to do this. And the faith comes doing it. You got to meditation is a matter of faith, and it's a matter of surrender. Each time you sit down, you do a little mini surrender, and these surrenders add up, and they add up to an expanded consciousness, to an evolving perspective of who we are, how we see people, how we see things. I remember one morning at breakfast, my husband said, "I don't know, it's just me," but when I'm reading the paper, I have a whole different way of looking at it. You see someone murder someone and you go, "Wow, what could have been done to this guy to become that angry?" Well, we never thought of that. We said, "Oh yeah, put him away," you know? So and you certainly don't think anymore them against us, you know, the whole triangle of evil or whatever, you know. You don't think that way anymore. You start seeing them as people in a cultural setting with their particular own culture and where they are on this path. And you can't come in and say, "Hey, I know, I'm going to tell you how to do it." It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. We can't make those warlords in Afghanistan suddenly be reborn. You know? They have to come to it on their own.
You said surrender. Surrender to God. We'll take you all the way.
That is not an easy thing.
No, it isn't easy, but you know. Once you get there, man, it's great.
So, anyway.
Christiane, there's all kinds of different types of meditation. You talked about centering prayer, there's mindfulness. What do you use, a certain kind, or what is your method?
You know, I started in centering prayer because that's what the flyer was about. And I had, by the way, the reason the flyer struck me is because about a year before that, I had heard Thomas Keating at the Mind Supermind. And frankly, I knew he was talking about something big, but I didn't get it. I mean, it didn't sink, you know. And it's only when I was desperate enough where I thought, maybe I should give this another look. You know, it was just another lecture at that point. But what they taught us, I like the fact that we don't just sit down and stand on prayer for the sake of relaxing, to rewire our brain. We're not doing it necessarily just for us. I like the fact that it's kind of a partnering with God, and that appealed to me in centering prayer. Thomas Keating suggests to find a word, and the word helps you kind of not get lost in thought. But, Spencer has a different way in our class. He says focus on your breathing. The whole idea is kind of staying in the now, that thoughts are going to come. And recently I told my husband, "I'm going downhill. I just am all over the place." And then we share kind of. That's kind of nice when you have a spouse doing it with you. And he said, "Well, I just listened to this tape by Frank Ostaszewski. He's an American in San Francisco who started a Buddhist hospice program. He assisted over 20,000 people in that process. He's a really very wise man. And Hospice Santa Barbara had made him come to the Mind Supermind twice. And on his tapes he said, "Welcome everything." And that's kind of the key here. We don't repress the false self. We got to welcome everything. So lately when I'm meditating and I'm just, thoughts are just coming, you know, especially with this presentation coming up, I started to just say welcome, and it was absolutely magic. The thoughts just dissipate. It just stops them right in their tracks. So that brings up something else that I was going to make a board on, but it got a little complicated and I didn't have time. Is God really delights in paradox? It seems like what is not going to work is actually the thing that is going to work. It would seem like repressing all these miseries that we have maybe experienced in life is the way to deal with it. Get some pills, you know, and just push it away. But God likes us to challenge that, and that is really the key on this. It's the opposite of what we think it is. It's kind of go with it, and then somehow you progress. It's a bizarre thing, and I actually started, I had made a session on paradox where I kind of experienced paradox. I'm sure Alice could tell us quite a bit about it too. And it's a fascinating thing. I think God delights in paradox. But I also believe he delights in us going on the journey, and he really comes on board once we commit to it. It's something that I think he wants to be part of. I don't know if you're interested, but at the end here, a guy came to the mind, supermind, Andrew Harvey, recently, and he quoted Father B.D. Griffith. I don't know if you are familiar with him. And he had a stroke at some point in his 80s. And just like, what's her name, Bolton Taylor, I forgot her first name, Jill Bolton Taylor, a lady, an MD, and she's a neuroscientist, so she spent her whole life studying the brain, and she had a major stroke at age 33, 34, and what happened is the damage was in the left part of the brain, which gave her an opportunity to be completely in the right part of the brain, totally immersed in it, and she had the most amazing cosmic experience. You know, I mean, absolute total talk of union, absolute union with God and the cosmos. And it was very transforming. Well, Father B.D. Griffith had one of those too with his stroke. And what he said after that, it changed. Talk of Ken Wilber, remember the top level? Well, it seems like Father B.D. literally went there through his stroke. And what this all points to seems to be that there is an evolving process involved in humanity as a whole. We're heading towards something. And the closer we get to our heart, the closer we are going to go there. Now, despite all the wars and all the miseries going on in the world, there is something stirring up, and the emerging church is a proof of it. Here's what Father Vini said, what actually spoke. What I have come to believe is that the very depth and extent of our crisis is calling forth an unprecedented force of transformation and healing that, if we align ourselves with it, can not only help humanity survive, but also transfigure it. The birthing of a divine humanity on a large scale is the real meaning of what some people call the second coming. The Christ does not need to return as a person. Jesus, in time and history, opened this path for us. Now I believe, what I believe will happen is that the Christ consciousness, and this is the true self that we are aiming for, this is what as Sagioli said, we start here. This is the me. This is my daily conscious life. We clean up this area. This is our subconscious. We are guided by the superconscious, and we evolve from here to our true self. And this is what Keating said, even though we are not God, our true self and God are the same thing. But the graph doesn't represent what really happens. Is we integrate it and bring it down in our day-to-day life. And once it's integrated, we cannot help but carry forth and help others. That's where the outpouring of the heart occurs. We lead others to the extent that we can to experience the journey themselves. And that's in different ways. For Maureen, it's Haiti. For different people, it's different things. And the opportunities are endless. So, yes?
Before he had the stroke, an English writer, the English writer interviewed him, and he was expecting this wonderful way of meditating, contemplating, because Griffith had been in his ashram there many years ago. And he got a big surprise. Pete Griffith says, I use the Jesus prayer. Mm-hmm. And if you, and it's a mantra, really ancient, ancient desert prophets. And the Orthodox monks use it. Yeah, and just all the different methods.
Yes.
And he went on to say, well, if you like, use the rosary. Oh, I never thought of that before.
Yeah, and I end every meditation with Our Father.
Yeah.
Because it struck me that the prayer Our Father covers it all. Hmm. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, the journey, thy will be done, his will is the plan. On earth, because I think Jesus dealing 2,000 years ago, whoever he's dealing with, the earth is the conscious self, as it is on earth as it is in heaven. Give us to stay our daily bread. The daily bread is what we need to face every aspect of our humanity, not just nourishing our body, but how we nourish our true self. And this is the bread that we need to face the false self and integrate ourselves, unify ourselves, balance ourselves, so that we can go on the journey. Let me just say a little bit and forgive. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us is an integral part of the journey. We have to forgive ourselves and we have to forgive others in order to progress on the journey. There is no progress without forgiveness. It's a major obstacle. And now here I got a problem. Lead us not into temptation. I got a problem with that. And I, frankly, until I find an answer, I changed it. I changed it to leave us not in temptation. Leave us not stuck here. And deliver us from this. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, now and forever. That's about it. And then, I only put this one here at the very end on page 31. I quoted Ralph Waldo Trine from a book my husband read, it, In Tune with Infinity. What it did, to me, this man must have had enormous insight. He was a great meditator. And he said that in born 1866, he already at the time had a vision of what the emerging church should look like. He said that religion in its true sense, and this is what Karen Armstrong said, but she was speaking of true religion, is the most joyous thing the human soul can know. And when the real religion is realized, we shall find that it will be an agent of peace, of joy, and of happiness, and never an agent of gloomy, long-faced sadness. It will then be attractive to all and repulsive to none. Let our churches grasp these great truths. Let them give their time and attention to bringing people into a knowledge of their true self. I mean, he didn't even know psychology. Freud hadn't published a book even by the time this guy died. And yet he knew, it had been, he intuited, he had an insight into the true self. Into a knowledge of their relation, of their oneness with the infinite God, oneness with the infinite God, and such joy will be the result, and such crowds will flock to them that their very walls will seem almost to burst, and such songs of joy will continually pour forth as we make all people in love with the religion that makes for everyday life, and hence the religion that is true and vital. So it has to be a religion for now, for everyday life, not for after death. You know, after death will take care of itself. That's God's business. It's not even our business. Yes.
Well, I notice in meditating that it isn't
during the meditation time that anything like ever happens.
Yes.
To sort of sit there and try to be faithful. But it's other little things that I notice. Suddenly somebody that used to annoy me doesn't bother me anymore.
Yes.
And I don't have to give my opinion about absolutely everything.
Yes.
And when this happens, I think, oh, gee, this is kind of different.
Yes.
So it's these sort of little
subtle things. Yes, it's those little subtle things. I remember asking David Rico, I said, well, how do we know when we have taken care of this neurotic ego? And he said, watch when, exactly like this, when someone pushes your buttons, you know, where you normally fly up to him and you just want to retaliate, when he just kind of bleeds you, you don't feel the need to retaliate. In other words, we got to get rid of our ego. It's there for a reason. It's called the executive branch of our personality. We need it to get somewhere. But it no longer runs the show. We start coming from here. And when the ego acts up, maybe we will not always catch it, but when we do, we say, okay, well, take a deep breath, this shall pass, and we don't attack back. So that's how it happens on its own. Yes, Mary?
Christine, I wonder if this is your painting.
Yes, it is.
And what can you say, and why did you bring this?
I thought it was a time to share that. We went to my husband's uncle's 98th birthday recently, and one of the guests there was the spouse of my husband's cousin. And he had had a horrendous biking accident. He was in a coma, I believe, for a week, and the doctor said he had a 50-50 chance to come back. And when he did come back, and as soon as we arrived at the restaurant, he said, Chris, I want you to do a painting for me. And then I said, yeah, I go, Armstrong, you know, he's a biker. He goes, ah, he goes, no. So he starts telling me that when he was unconscious, he found himself standing with his feet half over his precipice, and it was just pure, dark blackness. And his comment to himself was, I guess I'm going, you know, I'm going, I'm already halfway over the edge. And all of a sudden, he hears a voice very clearly, and he's adamant about this. And by the way, the man is not religious. He's a tough, big, long foreman. I mean, this guy is just muscles and tough talk. And he said, that voice was not my head, it was not me, it came separate. And he said to me, turn around and follow the path you have worked to do. And he said, well, I'm standing there ready to fall. And he goes, I didn't know which way to turn. And he said, I looked at my hands, and I had one hand in darkness and one in bright light. And he goes, well, I better go with the light. And he turned around and followed the path. And that was my way of painting what he told me. And I put this as the voice, and this is the, his whole family was around the bed praying. They had a prayer chain going while he was struggling between life and death. But he's very disturbed by it. And I never had a chance to talk to him, and I hadn't even really, this wasn't clear in my head at the time. But I'm going to send him a picture and ask him if this kind of sounds like what he experienced. Funny thing is, as I did this, I don't know if you noticed it, there's a face here that I hadn't planned on at all. So, voila, that's what that is.
He's going to walk this path.
Yeah, I Spencer thought this path is a little steep. So, I don't know, that was my, I might change it, but I haven't shown it to him yet, and I thought I might ask him once. I would like to hear how he saw it, you know, or maybe it was a meandering path, but for some of us it's a little steeper than others. So, that, I just, oh, and then what was this voice? And I thought, when he told me that, first of all, the path reminded me of this. So we really are, hardwired with this path. And the voice, I can only think it's the Holy Spirit that talked to me. And the light and the dark, I think those, again, that's a symbol used for going to the light, going to the light. You know, the same thing that famous light that I experienced in my experience, you know, we go towards the light. And by the way, when Bob showed us the Penn Wilberforce and there were all those colors. Mm-hmm. That's the first time, that was an insight, that I saw these colors associated with spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. And then I remembered all the rainbow of colors all merging into the perfect light. And that was Ken Wilber's way of showing the top. And that was my inner voice, God, who was subconscious telling me, you know, that's your potential. That's your potential after you carry all these rocks up. So, voila. And we're doing good time-wise. Any more, any questions, anyone? Yes?
I would be interested in your suggestion as to, you mentioned that when you meditate, you put a blanket around yourself, and it's early in the morning. Well, every time I try to sit down to meditate early in the morning, I fall asleep.
Yeah.
And if I put a blanket around myself, it would only make it worse. So, do you have any suggestions for that? Because the minute I close my eyes to, you know, get rid of distractions, I fall asleep.
Your body is talking to you. Listen to it.
Yeah.
I've been told that if you sleep, that's fine. You're also in another state.
I would let myself go to sleep, and then when I wake up, I'm meditating, and it works really well.
No, it doesn't disturb me to go to sleep.
So
that's fine.
I just don't buy it. I fall asleep sometimes afterwards, and it's a darn good nap. Yeah,
Thomas Keating answered the question by, well, isn't it the best way to fall asleep in the arms of the Lord?
Oh, that's a good one. Mary.
Christian, there's a line in one of the Psalms, and I can't remember which Psalm, but it says, He gives to His beloved in sleep.
Oh.
And it was St. Therese of the Zoo that never worried when she would fall asleep during their religious community meditation, because she said, I am present to God in another way.
Yes.
And He takes me, and she's using the He, because that was the idiom of the day. But that was, she knew she was just as acceptable in that state as she was when she was conscious.
Yeah, it's, I think as we, the more we practice, the more we will master staying awake, I think, because it is a question of maintaining awareness at all these levels, you know, when we're asleep, we're not aware, but maybe that's just something that needs to be done before we can work on it. I mean, I think if we're too tired, I have many times in the afternoon, if I meditate, it will really zap me up. I think Thomas Keating said a half-hour meditation can be a substitution for a three-hour sleep. So it's practice, it's work. You know, you just have to stay with it and not judge it. Kind of take it as it goes every day. Not aim for a specific result. It's not anything you aim at, you just do it. You know. So I think that kind of covers it. Any more questions? Anyone? Yes?
I'm just going to say, if anybody's interested, the first Saturday of the month, which will be this Saturday, at La Casa, there is an extended time to meditate with other people and instruction and many things. It's from 9:30 to 1, and it says in the big, this time it will be at the big house of La Casa in the terrace room.
Is this the one Sister Suzanne needs?
Yeah. And so anybody who's interested certainly would be very welcome to go. And and I find it's helpful to be within
group
from time to time.
There's an energy in a group, and that we all benefit from.
There's an energy, and it kind of peps up
my
own individual.
Yeah, it's a good thing to do in groups. Mm-hmm. My husband and I, when we have time, we do it together. We like doing it together. Yeah, and these experiences in higher consciousness that Spencer does, he makes us all face with the head towards the center, and he's in the middle, and he believes too that as a great energy at work when it's done as a group. Yes?
This is just a comment, but I've always been impressed how the Immaculate Heart Sisters open themselves up to other faith traditions where actually the meditative, contemplative path might be better articulated and give us insight. So we have much to learn.
Much to learn.
Be Griffith or
yes.
Anybody involved in a different path. Ken Wilber himself
yes.
Was raised in a Christian family, but he practices Zen Buddhism
yes.
with great respect for the Christian path of transformation, with great respect for the Hindu path of transformation, the Jewish path of transformation, and they all begin to look
yes,
alike.
They all look exactly. Thomas Keating, for instance, what got him going on all this was noticing all the young students that were all going across the street from the monastery where he was to a Buddhist temple. And he goes, well, what do you find there that we don't have? And they said, well, they meditate. And he ended up inviting a bunch of monks to stay in his monastery and said, teach us, how do you do it?
Yeah.
And then he started to look in the history of the Christian churches, and he found out that it was common practice before it was abandoned. It was part of our tradition before it was abandoned. And Father Vidi Griffith spent his whole life in India, and he had the utmost respect for all the Indian traditions, and he learned from them how to meditate. So, yes, we need to learn from all the others. Everybody walks the same path, and there are different ways to get there, and we can learn from one another. Yeah. Yes, Tom?
Well, Christiane, I want to thank you for this beautiful presentation, and I think you're a great model for what you talked about today. I think you would be attractive to anybody who might want to experience God in the ordinariness of life. I mean, I can see what silence or meditation has done for you. The courage that you had to stay with that original experience is part of the journey.
Yes.
You've let us know that it is a journey and a path, and it unfolds as it comes. I sense a great trust you have in life and the synchronicity of events around you that lead you. That is a fruit of the contemplative life. And you make me want to continue meditating myself. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I wanted to say that we have time to practice. Anybody want to practice meditation right now? I'll give 10 minutes of it right now. We have some time. 10 minutes of meditation, and then I'll explain the homework for next week. So do you want to do a guided meditation, or do you want to do a...
I am not very good at that. I've never
do a regular,
it.
Just a silent.
Alice, would you do a guided one for us?
I'm not good at guided meditations either. I prefer, just
silent. Yeah.
But okay. Guided, there are different... This is good. There are different ways. Many different ways to meditate. Guided meditations, have a value in their own. I'm not really good at guided meditation.
So let's do a 10-minute silent one. Have you got a timer or something?
Yep.
10 minutes and
or 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Is it too much?
8 minutes. How about that? Christiane, again. I'm excited. We're all on this journey together. I mean, we are all evolving.
Yeah.
Now, as far as next week goes, Barbara Crum is going to be MC next week. And she has prepared a couple of packets here, packet A and packet B. And in case I am going to paraphrase incorrectly, I'm going to read her words. Right. These are her words for you. She says,
use the microphone, please.
She says, here is what I might say to the group. One of the signs of the emerging church is the emergence of various creeds that are coming to life. We have gathered together some of these creeds and would like to do a study on them next week. In preparation for that study, we are handing out copies of the creeds to you this week so you can review and reflect on them and come prepared to discuss them. We would like you to go through these creeds and look for ideas that appeal to you personally. Underline those specific ideas so that you can tell us what you like about them. Our purpose in doing this exercise is to help each of us develop our own way of voicing what we believe when the Nicene Creed is recited each Sunday at the Eucharist. Please remember to bring your copy of the creeds when you come with you next week. We don't have many extras. They are marked A and B because there are different selections of the creeds in each group. When you arrive next week, you will join either an A group or a B group, depending upon which copy you receive. So when you come next week, we'll have tables. It's going to look different. The steering committee is keeping you on your toes here. There's going to be different tables with different signs on them so that you will be divided up into A and B. So I've got the creeds here, so please take them home and read them and prepare for next week.